Welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, licensed counselor, and marriage and family therapist. We are discussing the impact of alcoholism on families and also addiction, the impact of addiction on families. This evening, we have three guests from the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Addiction. We have project coordinator, Stacy Eppers, clinical supervisor, Claire Madden, and then we also have Diane Haynes, who is a person who's lived it and can give us a different perspective on this topic. So I'd like to invite our listeners to join in the conversation on addiction and the family. Call in 1-800-552-8502 with your question or comment. So Stacy, I would like to start with you. Tell us who you are and a little bit about what you do.
Hi, thank you so much for having us. For starters, I am Stacy Eppers, and I am a project coordinator for CADA, or Council on Alcoholism and Drug Addiction. And it has been my great privilege to work on beginning our new program, which we'll be talking about in just a little bit, the Tootsie Davis Family Education Program.
And Claire, tell us about you and what you do.
I am the clinical supervisor at the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse in Shreveport at Fairfield at our administrative offices. I'm also the clinical supervisor there at the outpatient clinic.
Okay. And Diane, tell us a little bit about you.
I'm Diane Haynes, and I'm I'm a survivor of the addicted family, recovering codependent.
Okay. So I'm excited to get started with our conversation. Again, I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on addiction and the family. Call 1-800-552-8502 with your question or comment. So let's start by talking about a little bit about the history of CADA and maybe some of the services that CADA provides.
Yes, we are very excited to have just celebrated our 60th birthday at CADA, and we are a nonprofit that is in the private health organization category, and our mission is to educate, counsel, and treat persons of all ages suffering with alcoholism and other substance abuse disorders. We also work with gambling addictions, and we have 14 different programs in four separate facilities. We serve beginning at age 12 in our youth program. We have an adults program, a veterans program, and very uniquely, we have a family program where women who struggle with addiction can come with their dependent children that are 12 and under and live and get help. We have medically supported detox, high and low intensity programs, as well as an outpatient program. So we're doing a lot of things.
And I toured the family center that you have, and it's great because the kids have areas where they can go and do their thing, and then the moms have areas where they can go and get the treatment and do groups and things like that. But it's also, you know, it looked like there was a focus on, you know, keeping that family intact, but also, you know, providing treatment.
Absolutely. Yeah. The whole family is very, very important.
Yeah. And that's unique. A lot of facilities do not have that. And that's what keeps a lot of people from getting into treatment is the fact that they have children.
Correct.
They need to take care of. So CADA also operates a school. Tell me about that.
Yes, we have our new school, which is the CADA School of Addiction and Behavioral Health. And we offer in-depth courses for students and professionals to learn about different issues affecting substance use disorders. And we offer hours for those becoming counselors and also maintaining credentials, as well as those classes are open to the general public for people who are interested in learning more for personal benefit, or particularly we've seen some interns who are interested in counseling in this area come and get a little snapshot of that. And Dr. Kent Dean runs that program, and he's just an amazing teacher and very passionate.
Yeah, and we've had him on the program before.
Yes,
excellent guest. And there's a new program that y'all have that's going to be starting, and that's really one of our focuses tonight. Is I want to talk more about the program, but just kind of give us a little rundown of what the program is.
Yes. So our new program is the Tootsie Davis Family Education Program. And we are very excited about this program as it's going to fill a sort of a loophole in services for families who may or may not have a loved one that's actually in treatment. And so we talk about addiction being a family disease, and we send our loved ones off to treatment, and the rest of the family needs some healing too and needs some education. And so this program will strive to provide a safe and nurturing environment for the family of those loved ones to learn about addiction, what it is, how the brain changes when addiction is an issue. They'll learn about the family system and how the family is affected and the different roles of the family members. And also we're going to talk a great deal about self-care and self-empowering so that family members can recognize that they can't change their loved one, but there are things they can change that will help change the situation and lead to healing as well. And it'll be a monthly program. We are making every effort to remove any reason someone can think of to not come. So this monthly meeting will include a light meal. It will have fellowship and support. And there's also children's care and children's programming for kids who are a little bit older. In addition to that, we will focus on providing education that is more than just support. It's really to teach families to understand what's going on in their family and how to change it.
Yeah, because addiction, it doesn't just impact the person with the addiction. It impacts the whole family. It has far-reaching consequences. And so y'all are really focused on treating all those people who are impacted.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the whole family approach is the successful approach.
Yes.
So we want to make sure that people understand their role to reduce reoccurrence and learn about themselves, too, in the process.
We invite our listeners to join our conversation on addiction in the family. Please call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So the program you're launching this month is the Tootsie Davis Family Education Program. So who is Tootsie Davis?
Our program is named for Edna Tootsie Davis, and she was a special friend to CADA. She believed in our mission, and she understood firsthand the impact that addiction could have through her husband's alcoholism. And Tootsie was a wonderful wife and mother and grandmother and great-grandmother and a community member who was active with her friends and her church. And she actually found support through Al-Anon and CADA in dealing with the addiction in their family. And we received a gift at her passing to begin this program. And so the program is named for Tootsie. And we're lucky enough that Diane, that's here with us, is Tootsie's daughter. And so not only did Tootsie leave a gift, but her daughter is carrying forward the work that her mother has done. So it's really a beautiful way to honor her memory and to help those in the next generation.
And Diane, I'm so glad that you're here because you can tell us a little bit about your mom.
Well, she was very kind. She's very loving. She had a very sweet spirit about her. She had to go to Al-Anon early in her marriage, and through the years helped many, many women in Al-Anon to get some peace and serenity. She was she had women calling her to get some support and help in order to survive their circumstances. She was very artistic. She knew that she had to keep herself busy to keep her mind at ease, and so she was always picking up some new skill She did leather tooling. She did sewing. She made all my clothes when I was growing up. She did mosaic tile work. She did ceramics. She made quilts. And, you know, she's left her handprint on many artistic endeavors and that we are able to, you know, hold on into the future and remember her by. But that was one of the things she did. She also loved to bake. So she was baking pies, taking them up to the fire department and, you know, just to the lawyer's office or wherever. You know, she just was very kind, very sweet, and she showed people her love.
And now she's going to impact lots of families in a positive way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why did Kata decide to focus on families?
Kata already has a family approach, and we have family therapy as part of treatment. And this program has been sort of a long time in the making, if you will, through actual conversations with Tootsie and Diane, going back years and talking about, wouldn't it be amazing if we could have this program that whether or not your loved one was ready for treatment, you could begin to find ways to heal and to cope with the situation. Living with an addict in the home or having a close relationship with someone who has a substance abuse issue is extremely stressful. And so the conversations came about that the whole family, the parents, the grandparents, and the children, of course, all need support, and they all have room to grow to improve the entire situation. And so with this gift, we finally just decided now is time. There's no time like the present.
So who can participate in the program? Do you have to qualify in any way, or how do you get involved?
Sure. You have to either be living with someone or in relationship with someone who has an addiction issue. And people will be able to sign up by contacting me at Kata. And really, there's no other criteria. The program, thanks to the gifts of Tootsie Davis and the Haynes, is free. And so we do require an RSVP process to make sure that we have the appropriate child care and to provide that light meal, as we discussed. But they'll just contact me and sign up. And they can come to all the sessions. They can come and go as their schedule allows or as the topic entices them. And that's it.
So it's a pretty easy, painless process, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Yeah. We want people to come, and we know that this will really help provide a supportive start to healing and to self-empowering as well.
We invite our listeners to join our conversation on addiction and the family. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So we've talked a little bit about the services and the program, but let's talk a little bit about how addiction impacts the family. When there's an addiction in the family, what happens to the family?
The family is a system. It's like a well-oiled machine when it's working properly. When it's not working properly, it's a machine. It's kind of like that little gear game that little children play with. If you spin one of the gears, all of them move. So when you have an addict in the family, it affects everyone. And, you know, they make a move and then it moves everybody else in the system. So if you're treating just one person in that family, you're going to make a difference. But a lot of times you won't have the person who's using just choose to go get treatment. And so the family can get help and start the process of healing without that person being willing to do that yet. So it's an opportunity for the family members to start this process.
So how does this program address that impact that Diane was just talking about?
The program itself will be a way to engage families who are all going through situations that are similar, and we will actually be educating classroom style and giving scientific research-based programming for coping, for understanding addiction, and people will leave with new tools and new strategies to make change in themselves and in their home. And the idea is that by finding support in others going through it and by learning true technical skills, that they'll better themselves. And just as Diane was saying, anytime one of those gears in that family machine changes, the other gears react. And so if the family is coming and learning and making changes, then the likelihood of that gear or the addict having to make change or recognizing something is going on differently becomes significantly higher. Mm-hmm.
So the role of the family in addiction sounds in part that it is getting this training, this information can help to kind of oil those gears, get them moving in the right direction. But what are there other roles of the family in addiction?
Absolutely. It's getting a family member to understand they do have a part in it, because generally people will come in and say, fix this person. If you fix this, then the rest of us will be okay. Mm-hmm. And what usually happens is if the person does get treatment, if they do get better, the family tends to have a lot more trouble. They don't know who they are if they're not fixing or finding or trying to work on one person in that unit. So it helps to understand that everyone plays a part in the family, not only in addiction, but also in recovery, because it can be really difficult to find out who you are if you're not always worrying about someone else.
Yeah, and that sounds similar to what happens in mental health treatment in general a lot, is that you have one patient come in and they're treated, and then the family is like, okay, now what's the crisis now? We don't have a crisis. Well, what do we do? And they don't really know how to interact cohesively without some sort of like common crisis or something.
Right. I think Diane said it so well when she said she was a survivor of an addicted family, because it does have such a catastrophic effect on the whole unit. And not only the addict survives addiction, which is terrible, but the family survives the storm that the addict creates. So everybody needs that opportunity to kind of figure out who they are then. Where do they fit on the board, the chessboard? You know, what role do they have now?
Well, and I have to say, too, that, you know, many times our hearts go out to the addicted person. I mean, it's a horrible thing to be dealing with. But when they do go to treatment or they do get the help, and maybe it's paid for by somebody or maybe their insurance covers it, the family is left behind to continue to pick up pieces, to try to get the finances straight, to take care of the kids, to, fix the car. You know, it's like so much leftover chaos.
And deal with their own resentment towards.
Exactly. Resentment is huge. And so you just have to, I've always had this heart for that family that is left behind. And then they make it difficult for the person who has gone to treatment, and they come back and the family doesn't know what to do with them. They don't know what to do with themselves. And so, you know, I learned that I needed help when I understood that addiction was just the addiction that was deadly to the addict. The codependency and the chaos was just as deadly to me. That could kill him, and the anxiety and the chaos and the depression and the
worry,
all of that stuff could kill me. And that's when I said, I've got to get help. you know, I've got to do something. And at the time, nobody, you know, you just had to find it on your own. Well, you still do pretty much. But this program will help people come to a place that they can have resources and maybe jumpstart that recovery.
So when we think about recovery, we often think about the person with the addiction, but the family actually plays a role in recovery.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What is that role?
Well, the whole, as I said, the whole unit, this whole machine has to learn how to work without this chaos going on in the middle. And oftentimes I'll see families, you know, they'll come in, want the one person to get help and to get fixed. And then, you know, if I do offer or suggest Al-Anon or family counseling, it's not me. And it's not necessarily when you think of who's creating such terrible behavior. Maybe it's not them, but paying for things for the addict while they're in active addiction, that's creating chaos. That's participating in addiction. And it's really hard to lovingly say you do participate in that and you can participate in the recovery. Mm-hmm. And some family will have actual withdrawal symptoms from stopping chasing after and worrying about and looking for their loved one. It's very real in both the addiction and in the recovery process.
So what can the family do to promote recovery? I mean, you mentioned, not giving money when someone is actively using. Are there other things that the family can do to promote recovery in themselves and in the person who has the addiction?
Absolutely. To realize, I believe, as Al-Anon says, you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you certainly can't cure it. So to set boundaries, and those are things that we set for ourselves, limits that the line we draw in the sand, not the ones we try to draw on other people. So recognizing what your boundaries are, what you will and will not allow, and then not erasing that line and moving it back.
Yeah, and that can be difficult.
It can, very much. Because, you know, if it's your child, my gosh, what? It's just devastating to sit back and feel like you're at the beach while you're watching your child go down the drain. That's what sometimes the picture can be. It's not actually that, but it feels like that to the family. So, you know, paying for things, enabling, paying for insurance, paying for cell phones, or they just got out of recovery treatment, and families will feel like, oh, okay, now, good, we're well, let's go from here, and they'll give them a car and, you know, let them live at home and wonder, nothing else has changed in that unit. They've been away for 28 days. That's it. And they'll be surprised, both the addict and the family will be surprised when there's relapse. So it's very important that the whole unit get help without trying to give a degree of who's more wrong, you know.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation on addiction and the family. Call 1-800-552-8502 with your question or comment. So how can involving the entire family, the family system, benefit the family?
Well, by staying in treatment, both for the enabler or the family member of an addict, and then also for the addict to stay in treatment, whether or not the other one does. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.
Yeah.
In family therapy, it's a fundamental part of any quality treatment program. It addresses, you know, dysfunction in the family system, and it helps family members understand how the interdependent nature of that system. And to replace those unhealthy boundaries with healthy ones, as well as attitudes, thoughts, and behaviors.
Yeah, and I found that sometimes having someone that you know, a therapist or someone who can say to the family member, okay, now remember the boundaries we talked about, you know, where are we? Are we staying on that path, you know, in a gentle, supportive kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But helping everybody kind of stay focused on the goal and...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I think, too, when you get, you've got this person in the family who's addicted to something and, you know, everybody wants them to stop. And so you get into this imaginary tug of war with them, and you're pulling them, you're trying to drag them to recovery, and they're saying, you can't tell me what to do, and they're pulling the other direction. And as a family member, we have to learn, we've got to let go of the rope, mm-hmm. because, and then the consequences can be ugly, but natural consequences mm-hmm. of our behavior is what starts teaching us when we're children, you mm-hmm. know. So if we're running on a slippery surface and we fall, we know then we're not supposed to run by the pool.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, it's just that we find it, because many codependents are kind and loving people, and we want to make sure everybody's happy, and we don't want them to hurt. And maybe we started a pattern with somebody many, many years ago, and that's just how we roll. But, We've got to let go of them and let them find their way, and quit trying to drag them somewhere they don't want to go.
Yeah.
And take care of ourselves and educate ourselves and become the person that God wants us to be, and try to figure that out.
Yeah, we can't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do.
Exactly.
And so, as you said, you know, stopping that tug of war, but setting up so that there's natural consequences, structuring mm-hmm. the environment so that there are things that make it beneficial for the person to get into recovery and stay in recovery. You're not forcing, but you're just setting up in an environment that so that it's beneficial for them to take that step. Sometimes can be helpful.
Yeah. Exactly.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on addiction and the family. Call 1-800-552-8502 with your question or comment. So why is it important to change not only the environment, but also the way that the family system functions? Because often in addiction, you know, we say change your people, places, and, you know, things like that, but it's
stuck
not just those things that impact addiction. Mm-hmm. So can one of y'all talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It's really easy to modify someone's behavior when they are in an environment, a controlled environment. It's the difficult part is maintaining that sobriety when they come home. And those external triggers can be very challenging. And sometimes family members can be one of the biggest mm-hmm. triggers. So understanding that and understanding how to deal with that, not only that if you are a trigger, why for someone, and it's not about you, you know, it's about whatever's going on for the addict. It's just so enmeshed. And as, you know, as human beings, I think when push comes to shove, family is always there. It's always there. So to lose one of those family members but yet still be living is very painful. And then to realize that in some way I contributed to that loss is equally as painful. So being able to address what part I play in it and how I can no longer do that is just vital for not only their recovery, but mine as well.
So sometimes families unknowingly engage in behaviors that negatively impact recovery, and they don't really realize it. Can we discuss some of those behaviors that sometimes the families will engage in, and they may mean well?
Absolutely. And a little bit of earlier when we talked about paying for things or expecting that, immediately trusting someone when they come home that, okay, now we're healed, we're good. That's one of the biggest ones I find that, well, they were in treatment. They were gone for 30 days. You know, they've been without their children, without whatever they've been without. And so I want to reward that. And that's great. But to understand the boundary, understand how much you can reward without maybe being one of those triggers or hovering parent or spouse. So feeling like also that whatever was done to you when the addict was in active addiction, stealing or lying or cheating, you don't have to instantly forgive that. Yes, they've worked very hard and they've been through a lot. I've come from both sides of it myself, so I know it's very, very, very difficult. And to be sober and realize to have to look at all that with lucid thought is very painful. But to instantly forgive, it almost makes it worse, you know, to ask someone to earn back that trust is not wrong. It's not unfair. And you're valuable and you're worth that. And you need to see that. So in any way that we can help families to see and understand that, that they're not being selfish, they're not being unkind or unloving by, you know, asking a family member to do whatever they need to do in order to come back and be trusted by the family. I think that's very important. And for the newly recovered person to not get resentful or defensive about having to do that because they created it.
Sure.
So they can uncreate it.
Sure. And I think sometimes family members do try to forgive too quickly, and it just kind of invalidates their experience.
Absolutely.
It needs to be something that happens naturally, something that they truly work through, so it's a genuine forgiveness, not something that they feel like they've been pushed into or have to do. I mean, they really need to process those feelings so that they can be a healthy, functioning part of that family system.
Absolutely. I think the spotlight, the energy, the attention, it's all on the addict. And if they go to treatment or if they get better, nobody's in the spotlight anymore. And everybody's just sort of, wait a minute, why did he get to go in the spotlight and not me? Yeah. You know, so it's a difficult process for everyone in the unit, everyone.
So I want to talk a little bit about the program again. So the program is going to have some support, but also some educational components. So what types of things will family members learn in the program?
Yes. So we've touched on before that we really hope that they are learning that they're not in control of their addict's behavior and that they didn't cause it. They can't cure it. And they, again, are not in control of the addict's behavior. One of the things that parents teach their children when they're very young is, you know, what your sphere of influence is. And, you know, children learn very quickly. They can affect what they eat, when they sleep, what they put in their bodies. And so it's important to remember those things are true of adults and of addicts as well. And so learning what you can and can't control is the key to opening that door and realizing what you can and can't help.
Yeah, because there's very little we control other than ourselves.
Absolutely. And yeah. Sometimes
we can't do that sometimes.
Yeah. Exactly. Sometimes that is the biggest challenge of all is controlling yourself. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk about those kind of things. Also, I think one of the things that's so parallel that we don't realize that we do and that we take for granted in talking about enabling the people around us or enabling our addicts, I think so much about my teenage children. And I think about the other day I went up to the high school to get my daughter for an orthodontist appointment. And there were parents that were dropping off school lunches to their high school students. And I almost rolled on the floor laughing because I know I'm tough, but I would no sooner take my kindergarten their lunch. That's a natural consequence. You leave your lunch at home, you have to eat whatever the school prepares. Now, that's not a comment on the school lunch food, because I'm sure,
it's delicious.
If you're hungry, it is good enough. But we want our families to realize, you know, if you're running over and paying the light bill because your loved one has run out of cash money, you know, on their substance of choice, then, you know, it's not a huge breakdown to say, okay, well, you might as well have just delivered the alcohol to them. And so learning about what enabling behaviors are and what natural consequences are and recognizing in your own self that you're doing it. If your kid is in a fight with a friend because they said something ugly or they stole a toy, do you run over there and you make nice for your child? Or do you say, well, what are you going to do about this? How are you going to fix this? You know, if your loved one gets caught shoplifting something to take to the pawn store to get cash, do you run over there and bail them out of jail? Because if you did, you've solved the problem for them. You haven't let them have those negative natural consequences and all of those things. Sometimes people don't understand. Oh, okay. You know, I should have thought about that. They don't realize they're doing it, and they don't realize how that fits into the big picture.
Yeah, and often they think that they're helping.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about hitting rock bottom, and we see it in every movie that there ever was an addiction, where it's the sad montage of the guy roaming the street, and he's lost his dog and his girlfriend and his apartment and his job, you know, and we want to fix those things for people. But the truth of the matter is, even in thinking about when someone goes through treatment, earning back that life, anything that we give to someone that they could have done themselves just teaches them they can't do it themselves. So empowering them and letting them earn that back teaches them self-worth and teaches them they're capable. And we don't want to undermine those experiences and teach them, well, no, you can't be sober, or you can't you know, you can't make that job work, or, you know, I'm always going to be here to pick it up. And that's part of that family dynamic or relationship dynamic that we want to explore and investigate and bring to light. You know, we touched on earlier, oh, it's the addict. Mm-hmm. Let's fix the addict. Oh, go to treatment. Everything will be perfect. You know, that's great. I mean, we surely didn't have a role in this. So we really want to give the family the opportunity to learn that role and to identify it in themselves and to know, okay, well, gosh, let's think about what would I do the next time my kid calls me from jail? I would say leave them there. Those are the natural consequences. So, you know, sometimes we just need permission amongst ourselves to make those changes and to recognize those things in ourselves. And it's really empowering and enlightening to the family members to learn about that and to learn about how to make changes. And self-care also, one of the other topics that we haven't talked very much about is trauma and its impact in the family. And one of the things that our families and our addicts go through so much when they're in this storm and there's chaos everywhere, they learn the ability to just be. It's gone. It's just gone. They can't function. You know, an addict comes out of treatment and you sit around the dinner table and everybody's sort of like, last time we were sitting at this table, so-and-so was throwing a chair and we were screaming about, well, how'd that disappear? Or I thought there was $50 in my purse. And so talking about that reintegration and talking about, okay, now what will be part of what we address. And families forget how to have fun. The children lose sight of the ability to play with their parents. Parents forget, you know, that they should have time building Legos with their kids or playing. And so reintroducing what normal family dynamics can look like and what normal schedules can look like and enjoying your family members is it sounds so simple. And if you have not had addiction in your home, it sounds like, are you kidding me? But if you learn to survive in chaos, you have to unlearn creating that chaos, and a step further back, you have to learn what it's like to not live with that there.
Yeah, because oftentimes these families don't have routines, they don't have hobbies, they don't have family activities, because they spend every Friday and Saturday night out looking for the loved one, or, you know, putting out fires. And so they really getting them back to a new normal.
Exactly.
A functional normal.
Exactly.
It sounds like a great thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Normalcy can be really foreign.
Yeah.
To people. A lack of chaos can be really uncomfortable mm-hmm. to some. It's a difficult thing to learn to deal without. It would be the worst thing you'd want is to live in constant chaos. But to be without it, it's almost more comfortable to have it because you know how to function mm-hmm. in that environment.
Yeah. Well, we do what we know. And,
right.
And sometimes what we know is dysfunction, and that can actually become very comforting because
right.
we know it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, Stacey, I interrupted you. What else will people learn?
Now I'm so excited about everything. I'm ready to go, ready to start learning. One of the things that we'll be doing, in particular with the children, we haven't gotten to talking about that, but also with the adults, is recapturing that joy. And so we have, we have a combination of sort of what I would consider the black and white educational topics of, what is addiction and self-coping and things, but also, following traditions and, creating new traditions, especially thinking towards the holidays. You know, one of the things that a lot of families do is they have a bottle of champagne with Christmas dinner, or they have the big party where they do dessert and they do, the famous cocktails and the coffee with the liqueurs and all of that. I'm thinking of a family party that we used to have as kids. Well, sometimes some of those traditions have to change to keep a safe place and to keep that family dynamic safe. And so we want to talk about creating new ways of being in family with each other and safe ways. You don't want to completely change everything or deny family traditions, but sometimes there's reason to make change so that you're not creating a situation for relapse or you're not creating the pressure. And that's the other thing I think too about the conversation about allowing your loved one to earn back that trust. It creates a whole lot of pressure on your loved one to come back and go through their first Thanksgiving in recovery and their first Christmas in recovery. And so, what's a way that people celebrate birthdays? Well, you go out to dinner and you have a few drinks and you go dancing and you're surrounded by all kinds of things that in recovery can be a challenge. And so talking to families and thinking forward through those options will be something else that we'll discuss. Different topics in terms of journaling and that kind of thing for self-care. Diane, can you think of some of the other topics we've talked about for training?
Well, I think that we, when we get in recovery ourselves as a family member, we might have more to our problem than the immediate problem. We might have grown up in addiction. So, I mean, we've got to learn how to do all kinds of, learn new skills on how to communicate with people, how to take care of ourselves physically, emotionally, spiritually. And I think that this goes so much deeper than just he drinks too much or, if he could just stop that, we'd all be fine. If you really start diving into recovery, you better get ready to go deep because it's deep and it's hard work. But I think education to me was a huge deal. And I was reading sometimes 5 books at a time, trying to figure out what was going on in my life. Why was I reacting this way? I would read a book and I think Melody Beatty followed me around and wrote all her books because she would just nail me. I was on page 57 in one of her books, every time I was reading something. So I think it's just resources that we provide for them, education about what the brain is going through when you're an addict, what we go through, what does stress do to our bodies, mm-hmm. Stuff that maybe people take for granted that you know or that you understand. And we're so caught up in trying to get him sober you know, that we forget everything else in life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we forget to spend time with our kids. We forget to go on a walk and enjoy nature. We forget to pray. We forget to go to church and develop. You know, we lose all our friends. It's just, you know, we just can get in such a deep hole. And so I feel like anytime we can have something that is educational and non-threatening, where they can come and listen and learn, walk away with a packet of information, have a phone call, have a, you know, phone number they can call, or and then maybe at some point they feel like they can step through the doors of an Al-Anon meeting, because that's so important for support. Because I certainly didn't think I needed them. I didn't want to go. You know, my parents were active in AA and Al-Anon, so I just felt like that was the last place I wanted to find myself one day. But it was a thing that saved my life. So I feel like we're going to be able to offer some things to people and hopefully grow this program to be more than just, you know, once a month. You know, that we can do it on a more regular basis, and maybe even have some other opportunities for people to do together socially and create support groups and stuff like that that they can be a part of.
I invite our listeners to call in with a question or comment. Join our conversation on addiction in the family. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So we've talked a little bit about children, but I'd like to really focus on children for a little while. How does addiction impact children?
Well, I can tell you that it hugely impacted me. I was a scared, nervous, anxious, that's the same thing, but, you know, I was just, my anxiety was huge. I was fearful all the time. Because my parents were focused on addiction, there were many life skills that you know, they weren't able to teach me. So I was, you know, I was a little apprehensive when it came to being comfortable around people and being able to be a joiner and, you know, grow and understand myself. Those were all things that were lacking in my childhood. My parents were awesome. I mean, I love them dearly. But that we had a disease in our family, and so it impacted how my brother and I developed as children. And I still carry a lot of those things. I can experience something in life and have it trigger old emotions, old fears from my childhood that I wish would go away. And they have, you know, they're better now, but it kind of wires your brain in a weird way. And it makes it difficult. You have to really work hard and retrain your own brain to get different and better. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It makes total sense, yeah. You constantly live in a state of fight or flight.
Yes,
you know, where the body's trying to reach a symbiotic state, but it mm-hmm. just stays in constant stress. And so you're right, it does map the brain differently mm-hmm. than it would a person who doesn't have to deal or live in that kind of constant environment. And even now, with adult parents that have passed and being adult yourself, you still, as you said, can fly back into that mm-hmm. anxiety when triggered. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really powerful.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes people think of trauma as something, a big event, which it can be, but it can also be a lot of small events.
Yeah,
that can create a trauma reaction within us that then, when other similar kind of events occur, then we have that fight or flight kind of reaction.
Absolutely.
So how does your program address the impact that addiction has on children?
Some of the educational topics, including family systems, will address the risk factors and thinking and kind of going back a little bit and thinking about the impact on children. When there's addiction in a home or in a family, there is a significant rise to the likelihood that kids will experience domestic violence, that they will witness fighting, that they will be in danger, maybe not directly, but I can picture, you know, two adults arguing and throwing things at each other and a kid, you know, kind of trying to stay out of the way or scurrying around and getting hit by something. It's just a visual that comes to mind. And when they begin to witness these things, sometimes they might choose to engage. I can think of a brave teenage boy getting between a mama and a daddy and therefore becoming injured. But the likelihood for direct physical or sexual abuse, emotional abuse, of course, in the family going on during those situations. And just as dramatic and traumatic is the neglect, not having enough food in the home if resources are being spent on the addiction or if someone loses a job, you know, and so these are all ways that kids can be effective. And so educating on the risk of those situations leading to depression, anxiety. Children blame themselves. They have a very unique way to say, well, this must be my fault, and I can fix this. You think about kids with divorce who daydream about mom and dad getting back together. There's a million movies out about kids, you know, strategically getting mom and dad to meet up again and fall in love. You know, you think about those things. Children do that themselves. And so educating the family on, first of all, understanding trauma, knowing that children take that burden onto their own shoulders and ways to help alleviate that. We will also be working with the children themselves on coping skills and on mindfulness, you know, stress reduction techniques that children can implement. And really for all ages and, of course, age appropriately, talking about what addiction is and what it means in their family so that they can understand the same thing we want our adults to understand. It's not their fault. Mm-hmm. They can't control it and they can't fix it themselves either. And so really separating what they can do themselves, understanding what their family members are trying to do, and so educating both the adults and the children in ways that are appropriate, of course, we'll address all of that. And that not only helps, but it also serves as a prevention, possibly, to some of that stress and anxiety, and to creating the awareness. You know, one of the things for any person going through a stormy time in life is that sense of being alone and that sense of, you know, why me and what's going on. And, you know,
is every family like this?
Is this normal?
Aren't they?
And when
this?
I grow up, this is just how it is. This is what my attitude will always be towards alcohol or women or, you know, oh, well, it's just normal not to have any food in the refrigerator, or it's normal, you know, every child panics when daddy doesn't come home for 3 days, you know, that kind of thing. Or you should always be scared if mama's sleeping on the couch when you get home. Those kind of examples. And so helping understand that you're not alone and that there is a light. There's a light out there, that things can change, and that, you know, what might seem normal now, you know, will be totally different at some point in your life. But also breaking that cycle through education is really important.
Stacey, you mentioned social media and movies and what people may see an addict as, or what's your bottom and all of that. But the reality is it is someone like your mom or me or your teacher and who's suffering from that. I know my son went through so much. My whole family went through so much. And I don't think really people would have looked at him and thought, oh, you have a mom who's suffering with something and going through a lot. He just had to learn to survive. And this really, it changes the brain. And it's so difficult to overcome. And you don't even really know you may have issues until you stop and have some familiarity, some reality with someone else and go, oh, you do that too? You freak out when a car goes by or when a knock on the door comes?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've seen the opposite too. We through a family friend, a teenager, as I mentioned, my own teenagers, coming over and saying, "Do y'all eat at the dining room table? Is that like a thing you do? I mean, we just like scrape for ourselves." Or, "Well, why do you talk to your mom so much? Why do y'all like at our house? We don't talk to each other. Wow. I mean, we live together, but." Why do y'all have to talk about everything? And to me, I'm kind of like, well, I'll talk about anything all day if I know anything. And so those kind of normals and those kinds of things come out as well.
Right.
When you think about the communication challenges in families, or I grew up with a family that had a conversational style that was extremely argumentative because both of my homes came from families with alcoholism in them. And my parents learned that communicating was more of like a yelling thing that you did. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting for me growing up. I can be very aggressive conversationally, and I get to talking louder and quickly, and
people hear you better. I can see
people's faces changing, and I realize, oops, I'm doing it. You know, I'm not at home with my sister, and at home with my sister, that's what we do because that's our normal. You know, and it's gotten better over the years, but it's amazing the things that you carry with you that you don't realize.
Absolutely.
Are from that environment that are a difference.
Stacey, I want, because we have about a minute left.
Perfect.
So I would like for you to, first of all, tell us where, when, how the program, and then also we had someone call in asking about if there are similar programs in other areas or how might they find programs in other areas.
Okay. At this point, we are the program for our area, and we are not aware of another educational program in our community now that is doing this exact thing. Claire, who's our clinical supervisor that's been talking with us, has information.
I can help with resources, at least to try to find something.
Yes, and we'd be happy to help with that. The way to RSVP to get involved now is to email me, stacy.epperss@cada, that's cadanwla.org, or you can call and ask for Stacy Eppers at 318-222-8511. Again, that's 222-8511. We do have a cutoff for our first program that is on Monday at 6 o'clock, and that deadline is tomorrow at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 p.m. to RSVP so that we can make plans for food and materials. And we just look forward to having a great program. And if you can't catch us Monday, then we'll be meeting monthly.
Thank you, ladies, so much.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope it was as enjoyable for our listeners. I'm sure it was. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Sheila Lawrence, Tim Snell, and Wally Derlin. Support for this foundation, for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.